freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. Is that you laughing, Howdy? Who is that?
Nelson Cruz.
It is?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, watching a big banger over
that.
The left field
now
wall.
It's coming back to me.
Mic'd up.
He hit a home run while he was here. Didn't matter much. See you later, Minnesota.
Go
See
Mariners.
You later, Tampa Bay.
How about Zunino? Zunino hit a home run while he was here?
Yeah, he hit one.
Yeah.
He also took a golden sombrero.
Oh, yeah.
He struck
hitting
out.
Buck 82.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, he was one of the league leaders in OPS for catchers, but you know.
Well.
Whatever.
It's all slugging, I can assure you of that. not a big on base guy, for sure. How about all that, man? How about this Mariners team, Brock? They've just reeling off wins as of press time, six in a row and what, 8 of 9? 6 in a row, 8 of 9 with a day game coming against Colorado. We're a day late today. Let me start there. Apologies. A day late. Brock, can we say why we were a day late?
Sure.
It's a great reason. Yeah. It's such a cool reason to be a day late. Like, it's not like me getting kidney stones again. Or
Mike was laid up in the hospital.
Right. It's not one of these lame-o excuses that we've come up with to
Convalescent center.
No, we actually have like a legitimately good reason why we weren't able to record yesterday.
Oh, it was fun. Molly and I and Macy got to take an unofficial visit up to the University of Wyoming and spend the day with their staff, and just on the heels of a couple weeks ago, taking Haley up to Missoula, Montana. And yeah, man, this next chapter of life is unfolding. I mean, it's just as crazy.
So just to remind folks, so because not everyone is like deeply invested in your family life, as I
yes.
am, of course.
Yeah. Or Kyle, so, or Howdy. So, yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Two girls, one boy, two older girls, one younger boy. Haley is your oldest, and she is now essentially, she's a freshman at the University of Montana on a basketball scholarship.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And 18. And the Macy will be 16 the end of July. So a really young to be junior. And as crazy as it was when we talked about Haley going off to Montana a couple months ago on this podcast, and you saying that's not right.
No.
Like, that's not right. That's
well, especially
a little girl.
Because if you call Brock, and he doesn't answer, you still get a 9-year-old Haley.
It's true.
Giving his voicemail about how cool her dad is because he's not available.
My dad's probably on TV or the radio.
She sounds like a kid. Avery.
Is that the one, or is it the one about her buns sticking out? You know, she
well,
was
both are. Both
so
are.
Inappropriate. It's not her buns. Goodness gracious.
So inappropriate.
Seriously.
So
inappropriate. That would be much more inappropriate.
Oh, my.
And now she's on in the big city at Missoula.
Oh, my. So inappropriate. Mom. She's in her underwear.
That person is now in college.
Oh my God.
In Haley's defense, it was so inappropriate. Molly pulled up to a bikini barista for crying out loud.
The buns?
The buns?
What is she going to think when she goes to a college party? My gosh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everything's going to be inappropriate.
Yeah. So she's there and Macy. So, yeah, I apologize. We were a day late. We had a blast. Had a great time. It will probably come up in our discussion in potpourri about the Supreme Court and the NCAA and everything else. So we'll have some fun with it a little bit later.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. It's going to be a serious potpourri.
There's some very large conversations going on in sports right now that we have not been allowed to have for a long time.
And I wish we were on the radio so I could do a tease, because Brock, I'm going to surprise you with my answer to your question.
Oh.
I'm going to surprise you with
which
my
question?
Don't you worry about it yet. Don't you worry.
Don't you worry
your pretty little
head. It's a tease of a tease. You want to know what this tease is about? You're going to have to listen later so I can give you the tease.
It's going to be a surprise, Brock. You can't reveal it
don't
now.
Don't you even worry about now. Don't you even worry. All right. The 2020 Mariners, the 2021 Mariners are what?
Sox favorites.
Are they?
Ever. This got to be one of your favorite Mariner teams of the last 12 years or whatever it's been.
I don't know if I'm saying that yet. I mean, I love them. They're really fun to watch right now. I mean, they don't hit enough to quite, I mean, like, I need some hitting to truly be favored. But I have some, I don't want to insult, please don't make me start off by saying things I don't like about them. I really like this team.
Well, I can't teach you up. I gave you a chance to say, yeah,
well, you
my
gave
favorite.
Me a chance to go, like, over the top in a way that I didn't feel
believe
was necessary.
Believe big.
That's my favorite Mariners team of my time here is the Believe Big team from 2010.
Yes. What it is ain't exactly clear.
Those teams are fun with Cruz and all
they're
that.
They're minus 45 run differential, yet they're 300. Yep, that's your 2021 Mariners, man.
I thought you were talking about the other Mariners, because they've done this before where their run differential is lousy, but their win percentage is actually pretty good. So they are enigmatic, right? I mean, you have to start by saying this team, they're enigmatic. There are days where you watch them and they don't look like a Major League Baseball team, and there are days you watch them and they look like a World Series team. I mean, they are, and it's hard to determine what you're going to get just based on the fact that some guys are playing well above their head and other guys are not living up to the back of their baseball card. And some guys are so young that they don't have a track record yet. The bullpen's better than it's supposed to be, right? I mean, there's a lot of things about this team when you watch them that it's very enigmatic and not necessarily the way you would have expected things.
That's right. I think that's it. I think that's probably how I fill in your blank is of everything you envision this season at nearly the halfway point. I mean, they've played 75 games or so. I mean, so they're nearly halfway through the schedule. As you envisioned over the course of this season, this picture that's being painted right now is, I don't know how many, maybe Howdy could have painted this picture and said, oh yeah, Kendall Graveman's going to be one of the best, you know, bullpen arms in all of baseball. J.P. Crawford's going to take a significant step and for a month be the best shortstop in all of baseball amongst a loaded position. Mm-hmm. Flexen's going to be amazing coming up off his Korean baseball organization experience. And this guy's going to be just a gem and a diamond that they find. And oh, of all the young guys that they call up, of course, it's going to be Logan Gilbert that's going to find footing the fastest. I mean, I just don't think in any vision, in any picture, in any puzzle of pieces put together for this year, at 39 and 36, this is the way that people would put it together.
Yeah, it certainly has. Okay, so let's start there. They're enigmatic. Brock, you mentioned fun. They're fun. There's no doubt about the fact that this team is fun and a lot more fun, excuse me, right now than they were earlier in the year when they couldn't hit.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the fact that they can hit.
Amen.
Right? I mean, like, it's really hard to watch a baseball team every night that can't hit. You sit there and it's like watching a football team that can't complete a pass or, you know, watching a basketball team that can't shoot. Like, when you cannot score because you can't get on base and you can't hit, that's a tough watch. But they've turned that around to their credit. Some of those guys, and we knew this would be the case, that were hitting under 150 are now above 150.
Do you think it's because Tim Laker started coaching them to hit?
Yeah, I think Tim Laker finally told them how to hit. Sheesh. Yeah, good
his
job,
Eureka
Tim.
Moment.
Yeah, guys, hit.
Oh, this whole time I've been telling him not to hit. That was counterproductive.
There was the fire Tim Laker, the hitting coach group. I always liked that group. I don't think that was the problem, nor was Scott Servais coaching them not to hit either. But they've started to hit, so they're pretty fun. They play with this energy, and we'll talk more about it. But if you want me to describe one word for them, Brock, it's resilient.
Mm-hmm.
They've been remarkably resilient.
Why? Because they played 51 guys already this season. They played nearly as many guys on this roster as they have games played. Second most in all of baseball, most in the American League, 51 through different issues of a rash of injuries, a bit of a COVID scare, and you know, up and down with some youngsters. And yeah, I think that would be an appropriate term to be sitting here. I mean, seriously, 39, and I know I hate to say these records because it feels like every time in June that we've done this a bunch, and even late June, it's like, here it comes, right? And I'm sure there's been listening like, oh, great. Glad you guys are opening your podcast, Mariners. You know what's inevitable. You know what's going to come, right?
It may come with this group.
Yep.
I mean, like, I think that's what prevents me from they're my favorite group. There may be another shoe left to drop with them, and because they are not as talented on paper as some of the teams that they're going to play. They're not as veteran as some of the teams they're going to play, right? And so over time, I think there's an expectation that some of those things will come back to bite them. But because they've been so resilient, I'm willing to hold out hope that that won't happen. Mm. Because as you just mentioned, they've dealt with enough injuries to have 51 guys on the roster, which is, what, second most in baseball?
Yep.
They dealt with the COVID thing, right? Where the COVID, isn't that what it's called, Kyle?
The COVID.
No, they dealt with the COVID thing where, you know, not just did they lose some of their better players for a significant amount of time, but in a way that was, according to some, preventable, right? So now you have the potential. I don't want to get into the argument about whether or not they should have, or but if one player on the team feels one way and another player on the team feels another way about it, you have a potential to break up your entire unity factor just over that, right? I can't believe you didn't do this. I can't believe you wanted to. That could go back and forth and completely destroy a team. So, okay, they survived that and seemingly have no problems. They survived the fact that Kevin Mather did what he did at the beginning of the year, which absolutely could have tanked this season before it ever got underway, and it has not. In fact, I would argue quite the opposite. It almost seems to have been more of a rallying cry and a way for this group to pull themselves together. And in no way did they seem to have faulted Jerry Dipoto or Scott Servais for the words of Kevin Mather.
It's almost a rallying cry for the fans, too.
Absolutely.
They finally had someone to put a target on.
Yes. So,
is it true the clubhouse has a little puzzle picture of Mather, like a major league with them?
Yeah. Is it
well,
piece by piece.
They put the clothes back
on.
Yeah,
that's such a decentivizing thing.
And if you win tonight, we'll put his pants back on.
They've also dealt with the fact that most nights they don't have as much, you know, on paper veteran talent as the teams they're going to be playing, and the fact that they've lost a significant number of games in a row, which can derail a season and essentially lead to the old tank job. Mm. Like, okay, I guess we're done here. Let's fold it all up and go home. And every time that's happened, every time it's looked like they were going to fade, they've come back and won 3-4 games in a row, four out of five, or in this case, 6 straight and 8 of 9. So every time, and go back to what they were doing right before this win streak, it looked like they were about to go away. Like, yeah, that was fun. Turn back into a pumpkin. See ya. And instead, they reel off 8 of 9, 6 straight games, 6 straight wins. And so resilience has to be right at the top of the list for them.
And they played the hardest schedule in baseball up to this point.
Isn't that crazy?
Right. Yep.
That's nuts.
The rest of the way, they got the easiest schedule.
So funny. I remember a week or so ago looking, I go, man, who else? I'm looking like, man, we haven't even seen Tampa yet. Like, we'll see. Yep. And then they come in and just beat the Rays 4 straight. Yeah.
Yeah. You said a word that I think, and I sent you some points of, you know, playing 51 guys and what that says to me and where credit and all that. We'll dig into it here in a second. But you said a word there that I think has struck me. I wrote it down, and I think it actually sums up a bunch of my points here. I think through 75 games or so, whatever we're at here, 3 games over .500 as they sit right now, four and a half out of the wild card standings, out of the wild card race, that word unified, which is about the antithesis of everything in our country and in a lot of places and in a lot of sport. But that word unified, I don't know how you play 51 different guys, how you have injuries to some of your most significant veterans, including Marco and Mitch once again, how you go through that COVID scare, how you bring up a phenom who bombs, you send back down, how you just kind of navigate this entire season if that crew is not unified in mission. In my life experience in sport, in covering sport, in covering teams, you know, it is getting more and more elusive. It's more difficult to do in this day and age. And for Scott and for Jerry and for that clubhouse to welcome in 51 different guys of all ages, backgrounds, veteran minor leaguers, young phenoms, you know, to see it all, you know, pieced together in this way. And again, I give J.P. Crawford maybe individually as much credit as anybody in that regard, but that's a unified team, man. Maybe it's not as talented. Who knows what the next 100 games are going to display? But as far as through this stretch, I'd say, Mike, this is about as unified a crew as we've seen. We didn't have proximity in spring training like we normally would have, and maybe we would have sensed that then. Right, we would have felt some of that. Golly, man, this is a pretty close crew.
I don't know that we would have, to be honest with you. I don't know that they were that close to start this thing. I got the sense that some of it is
that it's taken this adversity.
Yeah, a little bit. That it's sort of come as it's happened. I don't know. I don't know the answer. That's a good question. But you know, I'll agree with what you're saying. Unity or the unification of the team is right at the top of it. I had sort of 3 reasons myself of why they are where they are. One is leadership, and that certainly leads to that level of unity, and it's both on and off the field. I think you have to start with Jerry Dipoto and Scott Servais when you talk about the leadership of this team, don't you think? I give them a tremendous amount of credit for where they're at, and especially the field general in Scott Service. We've talked about it a bunch. His bullpen is outperforming their expectations. They're one of the best bullpens in baseball. So any complaints that his bullpen management is bad, forget it. He's doing a better than average, in fact, one of the best jobs in baseball.
Let's even with a Montero bullpen in there, for crying out loud.
Say what you want about Montero. He's pretty darn good against Tampa. In both
he won
of
that
those
game
games,
in extra innings. Last
two
time.
Games in extra innings. So, say what you want. The guy does have good stuff, and I think I know it's going to sound crazy. I've always believed that Scott sticking with him is an opportunity for a guy with really good stuff, maybe second best stuff in their pen, to turn it around and actually help them in the second half of the year. Because remember, sometimes you have to play the long game when you're a manager, not just the short game. So Scott and Jerry, but then you just mentioned Mitch Marco and JP. Don't you have to give all three guys credit for the leadership of this team?
Yep. And Kyle, who's got that significant dad swag.
And this team has, as many players as come out and talk about Kyle Seager unprompted, it's a huge sign of how important and how valuable they view him as teammates.
Was it JP that said he's just so basic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shed Long who told Jake and Stacy that his swag comes from his patience. He's just so basic that he's got dad swag through the roof. And the whole clubhouse follows his lead.
He's got the gray beard now. He got gray in the beard. He trots, like I think I would look trotting over to first base.
Tried to steal a bag last night. That was ill-advised. spend some time talking. You don't want to get caught on the back of your foot sliding into second base. So that's one, leadership. Two, development. Yep. And I know this has been one of the things we were wondering about, and it's not been all the players we were necessarily expecting when it comes to development, but J.P. Crawford's development over the last few years since he's been here into a Gold Glover, and now, at least over the last month, into a significant offensive piece. Shed Long, development. Logan Gilbert, development. And two guys that were struggling early but went down to AAA, came back up, and have played much better since would be Dylan Moore and Luis Torrens. Don't you have to say that development plays a role in that, especially in Torrens' case? He goes down. He was awful. He comes back, and he's good. Like, isn't that exactly what you want your organization to be able to do with guys that are on the cusp of being major leaguers but maybe aren't 100% of the way there? Go down, work on something, come back, and be better? That's development.
Yep. Howdy, he gave you 8 different opportunities to play Ballmer. Crying out loud.
No, please don't do that. No. We don't need that.
Developers. Yes. I love this company. Yes.
I like that drop much better. The developers drops the worst thing in our system.
Developers.
Like, we're developers. We're developing.
Jerry and Scott and their whole crew, Andy McKay, they've been developers this
developers.
Year. All right, enough.
Thank you, Howdy.
And then the third, and I think this is also a Jerry one, is I think they've been very opportunistic. And, we saw this a couple years ago. This is for the Mariners never get anybody good, and anybody who comes here gets bad crowd, and anybody who leaves gets good, right? Yep. You've seen some pretty good opportunism because you need those guys who sort of like, hey, look, this worked out. Who would have ever thought about that would happen? We remember it with Nola a couple of years ago. Austin Nola was like a great example of this. Last year, and he turned it into, some pretty significant pieces for him. But I would say Bowers has done some of that this year in a short amount of time. Jake Bowers, Drew Steckenrider, Paul Sewald, those guys have been kind of around, they've been good. They've helped you quite. Sewald's nasty, by the way. That guy's slider is like my favorite pitch on the team. I love him, and he's like a washout with a bunch of different teams. Last with the Mets,
Kendall Graveman has got to be on that list, is he not?
Yeah, I think he was a good player who was always injured. But they turned him into a reliever. Flexen's certainly on the list, right? I mean, these guys where you've been opportunistic, found them, and they've been better than anyone else thought that they would be. You have to have those. Now, they've gone through 100 different players to try to find them. I can't even name them all, right? I mean, there's like Mayfield and Haggerty, and I mean, like,
it's part of their process.
Yes.
It's been a part of their process for 5 years.
Isn't it exactly what Pete did when he first got here?
Yeah.
when they were in the rebuilding phase, which is where Jerry's at now, remember when we had those conversations about, man, the Seahawks are on their 950th guy on this roster?
They'd sign a guy, he'd be gone in two practices.
Absolutely.
Like, nah, you're not cut out.
But the Mariners, that's essentially what the Mariners have done this year, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them have worked, and they've churned through enough of them, like, okay, if Mayfield doesn't work and Haggerty doesn't, well, Bowers is going to work. Okay, let's go. Now you got Bowers. And finally, Shed Long comes back from the DL or the IL. I'm like, okay, here we go.
I think a couple of things. In order to do that, much like Pete and John had to have, you know, and they did it early, right? So Scott and Jerry are doing this with a little bit more time together, you know, going through different phases and before this just total rebuild. And Pete and John were on that from day one in a totally different game, totally different sport, everything else. But they had again, that word unity, right? They had a shared belief in the way they were going to do it. And I don't think you can do that and have success and be competent on the field unless a McKay and a Service and a DePoto and the rest of the personnel staff and the rest of the scouts have a pretty clear vision of what they're looking for. I mean, this is, you know, they call it to control the zone with their players and their pitchers and their hitters and everything else, but they're controlling kind of what we're looking for. And even though Pete and John went through 355 transactions in a year, you knew what they were looking for. They were looking for some length. They were looking for some athleticism. They were looking for speed. They were looking for a little talent. Man, this guy's got a unique gift. Let's see if it's good enough. He doesn't have everything, but he's got, you know, at least this one, and let's see if it is good enough and we can turn it.
Well, then and throw Jake Frilly on that list too, then, with some development, and that's another guy that they went out and acquired because he controls the zone, right? It's a, it's a great example of what you're talking about.
Yeah,
so Brock, all of that leads me back then to why aren't they signed? What are we doing?
Who?
Jerry and Scott. I mean, as we go through this, leadership, development,
who's
and opportunism.
Who are you talking about?
Aren't we really pointing to Jerry and Scott in a bunch of different ways for the successes that they've had this year? Now, you can point at, we've talked about this before, especially in Jerry's case, you can point at some things that haven't gone well. I understand that. I'm not saying this is like 100%, but when you think about the leadership they've had, that starts with Scott and to some extent Jerry for the players he's acquired. You talk about the development, that comes to Jerry and the guys that they've hired with Andy McKay, et cetera. And when you talk about finding and being opportunistic to find some diamonds in the rough, well, that's your general manager. So what are we doing? Why are we going into the trade deadline with those guys unsigned? Yeah, exactly. Dead silence on the other end.
Well,
I don't understand it.
I mean, I think part of it is not part of it. A major part of it is who is going to make that decision.
John. John Stanton, right
John
now.
John Lone?
Yes. Well, he has his group.
I know he's got his ownership group.
But the way they've changed their structure, he's now in charge.
Okay.
He is the one who makes the decision. And that will not change even after they find a president. The president is here to do business operations.
Mm-hmm.
John will oversee baseball ops. So John Stanton hires and fires the general manager. That's my understanding of the new system. And that should not mean they're waiting on the new president. That doesn't mean that guy wouldn't or girl wouldn't weigh in. The new president may, of course, you know, they're going to be an important voice in the organization. So would they have some, you know, role in advising? I would think so, only because, you know, most people like to talk to the folks that they believe in.
Yep.
But this is John's call. He doesn't need a president in place to do it. They said that this is now part of his role.
And he's got his kids in the organization. I mean, I think that's out there. That's not in breaking any news, right? I mean, his boys are baseball players, and he's told us before how much he loves baseball and still watches Little League Baseball. And you know, he's got his kids in there, and they're watching this organization on the inside of it, right? So they're seeing how those guys work. There was a shot of Service last night and kind of commentary about, man, he's a long tenure dude now, right? This is not, you know, here's a couple years and you're running through another manager and you're running through another manager and you're running through another man. He's one of the longer tenured managers in all of baseball. Is he one of the five longest tenured?
Yeah, we did this recently.
Yeah,
months ago.
There's a few more than you realize, but yes, he's
right there.
Yes.
In the top, whatever, 15, 20% as far as longevity goes. So, you know, if you're Stanton and there has been a ton of turnover, including your president, and a ton of personnel turnover, I mean, it is nice to have some stability and have guys that know what they're looking for. And right now they're delivering. I wrote three names down as we were talking through all of this. And I wonder if Scott Service, you know, ever does listen to podcasts on his drive to and from the park home. And if he were to listen to this, if he would just have this little, you know, his little grin, his little giggle, his little chuckle, and just say, "Gosh, you guys, I mean, I know it's what you do, and you guys like peel the onion away to the very core. But isn't there a part of this where it is just the pitching's been that good? That has been that bullpen you referenced, that it's been Kikuchi. And by the way, as far as developing,
yeah, let's
the fact
throw
we
his
don't,
name in the list too.
I mean, the I fact we don't put his name maybe near the top of that list right now, as far as lefties and all of baseball and the quality starts and what he is doing compared to what he has been. And when you pitch, what has he always said, man? When you pitch, former catcher knows, you give yourself a chance to win.
Yep.
And win consistently, and Flexen is pitching, and Kikuchi is pitching, and Gilbert has been pitching his last three or four turns out. And even Marco coming back, you know, pitched well over the weekend against Tampa. And that bullpen that you referenced, one of the better ones in baseball, if you pitch, you give yourself a chance. But once again, I don't say that to diminish your point whatsoever, but you have a former catcher that knows it's about pitching, and a GM that was a former bullpen 100%. Guy that knows it's about pitching.
Totally true.
You got to get that right.
Yep.
And if you get that right, you have a chance to win, and you can overcome a minus 50 run differential.
So let me bring this now back to what I think is sort of a central question moving forward, and it's going to start with a moment that, to me, Brock, is as significant as any the Mariners have had this year.
The Mariners looking
for a walk-off win.
That was a brilliant setup and execution.
But I have to explain the situation, because that's just the final result. Calm down over there.
Timing was good.
Super loud, too. Can you turn that down?
No.
My God.
What's going on?
Was that old time religion?
No. I mean, he certainly had the volume cranked up enough for it to be. Tone it down, Howdy. All right. Thursday night against the Rays, okay? Ninth inning, they tie the game on a shed-long double with one out, right? So you now have men on second and third, tie game, bottom of the ninth. Taylor Trammell coming up, all he has to do is hit a fly ball to win the game. And Scott's left with a choice because it was a Kyle Seager off day, right? So he can give himself the best chance to win that game. There's no doubt about it. Pinch hitting Kyle Seager gives you a better chance to win the game. He's a veteran, right? He's a better hitter. Like there's a
and he's not Taylor Trammell.
Well, whatever.
He's struggling.
He's struggling a little bit right now. But okay, you have an opportunity to win the game right there by going with Kyle Seager to come up with a fly ball or get a hit or whatever's going to happen in that moment. That's option one. Option two is you give a guy in Taylor Trammell, yes, he's been struggling, an opportunity to win the game and be a hero without needing a hit. He doesn't even need a hit. And by the way, the infield's going to be drawn in, so getting a hit is even easier. He doesn't have to deal with a guy playing, you know, short right field slash second base and everything else in the shift. You're giving Taylor Trammell the best possible situation you could to be a hero, right? And he chooses to do this, give Seager the at-bat, and obviously he delivers.
The Mariners looking for a walk-off win here in the bottom of the ninth inning. And the Fairbanks 0-1 pitch on the way to Kyle Seager. Swinging the ground ball, base in the right field. The Mariners win it. Bowers will score. Kyle Seager with a pinch hit. RBI walk-off single here in the bottom of the ninth. And the Mariners come from behind and beat the Rays 6-5 to take the opening game of this four-game series. And Seager's getting bobbed out there in shallow right field.
Okay. So just imagine that same scenario, except instead of Seager getting mobbed, it's Taylor Trammell.
Mm-hmm.
Is that more valuable for the long-term development of your team?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean it's going
to
work.
It's harder for me to imagine.
It's harder to imagine, absolutely. Especially he's a young kid and he hasn't done much yet, right? And he's had some struggles. But if he does, you know, he's hitting 160 at the time of that at-bat. He's 0-2 in the game. But if he's the one who comes up, he doesn't need a hit. He just needs to get almost just barely needs to make contact. Heck, he could suicide squeeze if you want. There's a lot of options. And here's the best part of it. If he doesn't come up with it, A, somebody else is going to come up next. It's going to be J.P. Crawford who comes up now with two outs. So you still have a chance for a hit to win the game. And even if he doesn't get a hit, the game's not over. You're going to the 10th. You're already tied.
Yeah.
So all right. I might have considered going the other way. But Scott, I think his view is, well, you got to do what's best for the team. Fine.
That's right.
I understand that. But doesn't this then signify some level of change in their philosophy of where they're at in their development? If they're 100% in development stage, then you absolutely let Tramiel hit.
Yep.
And it's easy cover. Hey, Seager's off day. Sorry, he was getting an off day no matter what. Same as it was for Haniger a couple of weeks ago. Doesn't matter. Off day, unavailable. Sorry. You could easily say that. But clearly, something has changed in the organization where they believe that the win that they come up with that day has value. And perhaps more value than giving Tramiel an opportunity to come up with a big moment.
Right. Is it because they're winning? I know at that point they were still a couple games under 500 going into that series, right, with the Rays. But the fact that they're not 15 games under 500, right. I mean, they're 15 games under 500, Taylor Trammell is getting that at bat.
I would hope so.
Yes. But when you're flirting with 500, now you're three games above it as we tape this podcast and teams winning. And, geez, we're getting some pretty good pitching.
Well, and your general manager don't have contracts.
That's right. And that's a big part of it, I think, too. If I'm Scott Servais, I'm going, hey, look, I understand the long-term development for the team. It's better to have Tramiel do this, but I don't have a contract. Like, well, hey, I'm happy to, like, you know, help you guys out with the long term, but like,
but I got to manage to win.
I got to manage to win. I don't have a job next year, and if you don't decide to keep me, I got to show somebody else that I know how to do the right things in order to win. I want to be able to point to a record and say, here's what I did. Now,
everybody's,
I don't know,
been watching me for 3 years just make long term decisions. Nobody knows how to actually manage a team to win a game.
And so I mean, I can't imagine that in an interview, Scott wouldn't be able to point to and be like, hey, obviously I knew that the best thing chance to win there was to do this. But, you know, he's got to point to something.
Yeah.
And so
a prospective baseball operations manager is going to go to ownership and say, hey, we want to hire Scott Servais. He hasn't managed a winning team since 2012.
Right. And for him to be like, well,
No.
I think that's not true.
Well,
I think he's had winning teams since 2012.
All the same.
Still, I don't think that's an accurate statement, but I love where you're going with it. I like that you said it with great confidence.
Yeah.
Enough so that everyone was like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. I'm sure that's true. It's not, I don't believe, but okay.
So we know in Tampa and in L.A. that decisions, even in-game decisions, are not necessarily the manager's decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know, is everything that Scott wants to do, is he able to do?
I've never heard otherwise.
I mean, there's no signal from DePoto or Stanton or anybody else.
I've
never
heard otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard that, no.
Yeah.
And I think it's also reasonable to suggest that decision, maybe that's what sparked the winning streak. I mean, he makes that call on Thursday night. They then rattle off three more wins against Tampa and the first one against Colorado. Are those two things related? They were already playing some decent ball beforehand. They'd beaten the Twins, who are awful. So I don't know. I don't know how exactly to look at it.
Is there one guy in that clubhouse that would think otherwise? Is there one player in there that's like, damn, we should have given that to
No, Taylor. Of course not. But yeah,
man, we're developers here, aren't we? Taylor deserved that. No, he didn't. He's struggling. He's scuffling. The game sped up on him again.
It's one for his last 25.
Unfortunately, it looked like after coming back from T-Town, where he was just on fire, that, you know, maybe found a couple things. Well, maybe not. Maybe more adjustments. Maybe this crazy roller coaster that it is for young players, and many, many of them. But I don't think he had one player in that clubhouse that did anything but celebrate that decision.
100%. And I wouldn't expect anything less than that. The question is really more organizational and where you're at and what it signifies. And if we're going to make the argument that leadership and, you know, is a big part of this,
yep.
Well, that's where it comes from, right? Bringing people together for unity. On the other hand, if development is a big part of the long term, I don't know whether this is necessarily the best thing for Taylor Trammell's development,
mm-hmm.
but that may have to take a back seat for a little while as they see opportunities to win. But then what does it tell you about Mitch Haniger's future? Because we talked to Jerry DePoto last week, and he sure didn't sound too positive about Haniger signing a long-term extension, and it made me think that they were very open to the idea of trading Mitch Haniger. But if you're in this winning mode where you're pinch-hitting Kyle Seager for Taylor Trammell, you can't trade Mitch Haniger,
so
can you?
So choose a line in front of me.
Right.
Thank you. I knew that was coming. Appreciate that.
It's kind of true, though, right?
Yes.
Like, and that's sort of always been Jerry's thing of, like, can I find ways to do both at once?
Yep.
And maybe that's what he's going to try to do. And if you're looking for you know, hints and trying to figure out what they're going to do with the deadline, I would look at the, like, Marco Gonzalez deal they pulled a few years ago where they traded youth for youth. Yep. Or I would think the Mariners will be somewhere more on that scope rather than, I can't imagine them trading a big prospect for a veteran hitter.
No.
Or pitcher. They're just not going to do that.
I can't imagine them trading Mitch Haniger for a couple 18-year-olds.
I can't imagine them doing that either. So what is the in-between?
The in-between is doing what you did to get Mitch Haniger in the first
place. Exactly right.
It's trading the Ketel Marte trade.
Yes. Because unfortunately, it doesn't sound like, I'm going to guess Mitch just hasn't been interested in signing a long-term deal. That's my guess. I don't know that.
It sure seems that way. I can't imagine a GM that wouldn't want to sign that guy to an extension every year he's been.
Or maybe the Mariners are just like, he's just too injury prone, and like, we just don't want to, we just don't trust it, and unfortunately we can't commit our resources to it. But whatever thing is going on, whether it's Mitch doesn't want to sign or they don't want to sign him, they don't seem to have made any progress towards something long term. So if that's the case, his value's high, you probably want to deal him. But you Howdy's right, you can't deal him for 18-year-old kids.
Nope.
You can't do that. Nope. So you've got to do something akin to what you did to get him.
Baseball card for baseball
Jerry's
card.
Got a pretty good resume doing that.
And you got a nice stable of people you could pair with him to really make that deal work. You could add Chris Flexen into that deal, and it's tough, but you're giving up two short-term pieces
I brought up that name last night. Like, hey, maybe like Flexen, maybe trade him now before he turns into a pumpkin. And Bob Stallings like, really? Like, no, absolutely not. Like, what you've gotten out of Flexen, you need him. He's only 27. His value to you is more than it is to other teams. He might be right. There's a good argument there. But my mind went exactly where yours did, Howdy, which is like, is Chris Flexen really going to be great?
Are you sure he's a number three starter on a playoff team next year?
Right.
Are you sure?
As it usually does, Mike, your mind and Howdy's mind usually a lot of alignment.
Well, I would throw Kikuchi on that list as well. Like, is this, he's not signed long. I guess you have the sort of option.
You have the ability
to
have him for 3 more years.
Do you want that? Like
$15 million a year.
Do you believe that this is who he's going to be? Or do you, we've only seen half a year of this, Brock.
Yeah.
So Howdy's absolutely right. Like, there are ways to
Kendall Graveman. You put Graveman and Haniger together.
Etch it in stone. Howdy's absolutely right.
Can you edit that out, please? Let's go back. All right, start over. Play the Brock and Salt thing. Let's start this whole thing
from the top. We'll do it live.
And when that call comes, all right, that text comes from Jerry to John. Hey, can we chat? And Jerry proposes that deal to Mr. Stanton, as we know Mr. Stanton, as we've gotten to know him, as we've watched him as owner of this franchise. What is Mr. Stanton going to do?
Well, he knows that...
go ahead, Jerry.
He's going to say patience.
Well, if he empowers Jerry to do a deal like that, then get him extended, end of story. Okay? If you're going to empower that and you're going to trust it, and man, there have been numerous times that John sat with you and I, right? And he loved the way Jerry operates and he works and he's so detailed and he's got spreadsheets and his databases and he talks to everybody and he can talk and he puts these deals in place. So, it's just a businessman, Mr. Stanton. If that deal comes to you and it's a significant one and he wants to make that trade and you empower him to do so, then you believe in him and extend him. Period.
The only reason I can come up with is that they just believe there's a chance for Theo. I can't come up with another reason why you wouldn't sign Jerry. Maybe you just think that you have a shot at Theo Epstein as your president and change the structure back and he does a little of everything and that's so alluring that it's not worth signing Jerry DePoto. But you're going to truly bank on that? I don't know. So that's where they're at. That's kind of where things stand. For the Mariners right now. Things are, it's been good, bro. I've been to 3 games now in the last 10 days or so. Yes. It's been great. And things are opening up. Like, it feels good here being around people and all that. And
stadium looked and sounded last night.
Yes.
Like, just alive again.
It's an active fan base.
Yes.
Proud for a Tuesday night.
It's great being there. I mean, when you really get eyes on some of those guys, like seeing Crawford and the way he acts in the dugout, seeing Shed Long and the like sort of skiing thing.
Yeah,
they were doing.
I thought he was rowing a boat.
I think it's a skiing.
It's a PJ Fleck thing.
It's like a slalom.
But it's slalom.
It's like Alberto Tomba.
Yeah, it's Tomba like Bomba. Peekaboo Street.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bodie Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're doing some sort of a skiing thing. It looks like. Anyway, it's fun being out there. So highly, highly recommend going down to the park. Anyway, events now are being rescheduled. Right. A lot of the things that were supposed to be done. Howdy, aren't you doing a? Or you're doing a funeral, unfortunately, right?
Yeah, I have another one coming up this weekend, yeah.
But I've talked to a few folks that are doing some rescheduled weddings from the last year that they're finally able to bring their family together. So maybe it's work happy hours, belated
it's graduation
birthday parties,
time. Reunions. My nephew's having his graduation.
All right, so yeah. Famous Dave's Famous Q caterings are ideal when you want your event to be delicious, memorable, and stress-free.
Yes.
Anybody not a fan of those three things, delicious, memorable, stress-free, then start thinking Famous Dave's Famous Q. All right, you pick a date. They handle the rest. Just pick a date. Can you pick a date? Is that something you can do?
July 1st.
July 11th.
Okay, Brock and I can pick a date.
All right, pick a date.
I don't know what's wrong with you two.
They're going to handle the rest from customized deliveries. No pickup or full service, or from pickup to full service. Famous Q is designed to allow you to kick back, relax, crush some classic Q. Now, that could mean getting Georgia chopped pork, barbecue pulled chicken sliders, could mean Famous St. Louis style ribs. At Famous Dave's, as you know, authentic barbecue is behind everything. The pitmasters get the hickory logs smoldering in the smokers around
4 a.m.
every day. The meats are hand rubbed, fresh spices, slow cook them to perfection. They've also won more than 700 awards. That's why they are the authority in the barbecue world. So, where can you find them? Everett, Tukwila, Tacoma.
The Ghost Kitchen
in Northgate, Seattle. So all right, more information from their smoking starters and fresh salads to barbecue bundles and feasts or slow cooked goodness. Check out FamousDaves.com. Leave the barbecuing to the best. Famous Dave's, America's favorite barbecue. All right, Brock, potpourri here because we've got a ton of like interesting sports things going on that are, I mean, some are just straight sports, some are sports adjacent. We got a lot here. So let me see if I can buzz through a few of these. Let's start, because I know we got some people who were hoping we would talk about this. It's a 12-year conversation we've been having about the NCAA and its legitimacy and where the whole thing goes with not paying student-athletes. So the NCAA has this big Supreme Court ruling this week, a 9-0 vote. I don't know that this itself is going to make major changes to the way NCAA is run. But I think what's interesting is Justice Kavanaugh takes the time to write a like side decision. It was not even part of the decision. He just added this addendum essentially to the court decision.
As sometimes Supreme Court judges do in major cases.
Absolutely. But it's not necessarily related to the decision they made. He's just taking this an opportunity to make a statement about something connected to the case they made and perhaps give credibility to others who want to bring new cases against the NCAA. And I'll read his quote. I think it's very ominous. He says, the NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not policy. That is not a Supreme Court decision. That does not mean that they now have to pay student athletes or anything like that.
Yep.
But if I were an enterprising young lawyer or I was a young player, I would think that Justice Kavanaugh is signaling me to try something in front of the Supreme Court that he just might be willing to hear it because he's not wild about the system that the NCAA is profiting off of.
Yep. Yep. And I think for 12 years, we have talked about this model and this, you know, I'm going to call it a model. I'm not going to call it a business. This model does not fit current financial circumstances. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't. And I would never argue otherwise, right? Through all the times that you and I have bickered about this and I get all red and my heart starts beating fast and my palms get sweaty like Eminem song, right?
I have spaghetti over
knees
there.
Weak.
Pretty much. Yeah, knees weak. Palms are sweaty. Mom's spaghetti all over my sweat. All the times
you sweater already.
You and I have done this, right? I mean, this model was never built.
Right.
This was not a business. I would say to Judge Kavanaugh, like this was not a business.
But now
that
it
was,
is.
That was built to handle this and sustain this, and now it's become So continue.
No, I mean that to me it's just. This is if I'm the NCAA, I'm in full-fledged panic mode after reading that. The decision, like, okay, whatever. And we've talked about name and likeness and some of the compromises that they're working on.
Yep.
But I don't see how it's going to be enough. Eventually, the Supreme Court has indicated they're potentially willing to hear a case saying that the NCAA business model is antiquated and impossible and violates the way businesses must be run.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, what the heck is going to happen? I mean, Brock, I've always agreed. You know, it's funny because you and I have spent so much time talking about it, and I get your arguments. Like, yeah,
I'm a red-blooded capitalist that turns to a blue socialist. And you are a blue socialist that turns into a red-blooded capitalist.
Socialist.
When we have these conversations, I believe in protecting the entire model.
Right.
I believe in protecting all the sports, as I said to you guys.
Free market.
As I said, yeah.
Just a free market guy.
You just are. Yeah. You know, I was up in Laramie, Wyoming, and watching the wrestlers train and watching the track women, men and women athletes train in that way. Room and look at the amount of work and the volleyball teams in there and just think about, oh my gosh, they got a beach inside their new weight room. They've got a beach volleyball, basically a sand pit, and then they've got a turf berm that's built in this weight room. It's beautiful, and it services the football team and the other sports.
You have a berm in the weight room?
Yes, to sprint. Like,
what?
To sprint, yeah.
Like for like, the 12s to run on?
No, and it's not
Bear
huge.
Crawls, boys, go,
probably,
go.
I don't know, it's probably 10 yards wide and, you know, but 20 Brock, yards long.
Don't you think that's turning them all into Ivan Dragos instead of Rockies? Like, shouldn't they be out actually running on the cliffs?
Could be. Sure. But it gives those kids every opportunity in all those different sports. And the head of their strength and conditioning was talking about this machine that they've got that evaluates all the volleyball girls. And they're jumping to see, you know, where their force and how they land and where there's, you know, risk of injury.
Right. And none of that's possible without the money generated by football.
Correct.
Right. Correct. I get it. I don't know that there's a good answer to this question. I think this is why we always.
And by the way, let me take it even a step further. At the very end of this meeting, right? At the very end, we sit in this office with the coaches, and they've got a peachy folder full of, you know, some of their different academic opportunities and you know, internships. And it's just a really cool packet. And then they're like, okay, in these 10 sheets right here, Macy, we can't staple that for you. You see the stapler there. You're going to have to staple it. For compliance purposes, I'm dead serious. We can't staple that for you and hand it to you and give it to you, because then it would be a gift, you know, outside the norm. Everybody else can get the sheets of paper, so those aren't illegal, but you've got to staple it yourself.
That's funny.
Yes. That's an added benefit that you would get. That's the ridiculousness of it on both ends of the spectrum. On one level, right, you're just trying to, you know, it's Judge Kavanaugh said, you're making billions of dollars, you're treating these people so unfairly. On the other end of the spectrum, you got to have such nitty gritty details because there have been so many cheaters through so many years. Agreed. Because greed, right, it trumps so much of that, and power and control with these coaches and these administrations and these boosters and everything else, that I can't have a slice of pizza with Haley in Montana. Can't have it.
Here's the problem,
compliance though. Says can't do that, or you know, you got to pay for that slice yourself. Like that is the whole entire just lunacy of your spectrum.
Great points. Although I don't know what a peachy folder is. Is that like a Manila folder?
Yes.
Okay. Never heard that term before.
It's a West Coast.
Your love of 80s culture.
Right? A peachy folder?
Yeah,
I mean, a Manila folder.
It's got
slots inside.
Yeah, it's usually laminated on the outside.
Correct.
A lot of times in the 90s and 80s, there were a bunch of designs and pictures that they put
on
the front.
Those are called peachy folders?
It's a peachy folder.
Never heard that term in my entire life. Anyway, Brock, great points. But here's what it comes down to. Here's ultimately why, as usual, I'm going to side with Justice Kavanaugh.
Once again, me and Brett.
You become that red-blooded free market capitalist. Go ahead.
The system is just unfair, and that trumps everything else. While I understand what you're saying about the competitive imbalance and the greed, this, that, and the other, at its core, what he said is right. The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student-athletes in innocuous labels, but they cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. He's right. It would be. They are profiting enormously on the backs of unpaid labor. And that in and of itself trumps every other argument you've made. But I'll say this. The same teams win every year anyway. The same teams win every year anyway. So, okay, Alabama's going to be able to pay more to the kids and this, that, and the other. They win every year anyway. Ohio State's, okay, they win anyway. The best teams and the teams where they care about it the most are already rising to the top in the current situation. So wouldn't it be better if the kids themselves got some of that money instead of the adults, instead of the coaches, instead of the sand, instead of the berm? Give it to the kids who are actually the ones we want to watch on television
every
week.
There's nothing left about the system that is operating the way it was intended to
operate.
That's
right. So
nothing left.
Somebody is going to
have. There's a whole lot left that's operating. Absolutely not. Who is it? Who is it unfair to? When you say it is unfair, who is it unfair to?
Unpaid labor.
So the women's volleyball players and the gymnasts and the track?
I didn't say that.
No, I'm just asking.
They're not profiting off of those people. They're profiting off of essentially the football players, the big schools.
Okay, so it's unfair to some football players at Alabama.
It is unfair to football players.
Is it unfair to the football players at Wyoming? Is it unfair to the football players?
No.
Basketball players at UConn?
And they might not get paid in this. And they might not get paid in this system.
Right.
Because no one's really making money off of them. Right? Is that where the money's being made off of? The people that are deserving of the money are the people that are that are bringing in the money. That's what I want. I want the people who work
just at the very top.
I mean, I don't know who when you say the very top, you mean the top players?
Yeah, I mean the top players at Alabama.
I think you're saying the top. No, I don't think that's fair to say. I think you would say the team. I mean, the same as you would in any other league.
But is Alabama Alabama without Nick Saban? Is Nick Saban the one bringing in the money for the program?
Because Alabama certainly was not Alabama before Nick Saban.
No, but Nick Saban isn't Nick Saban without some really good players.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have been first-round picks and succeeded quite well in the NFL. So I don't have any. It's not that I don't want Nick Saban to be paid. I'm not saying he should have to work for free, and Nick Saban should make more than, you know, someone else.
When these huge blanketed...
Nick Saban should make more than Sark. I'm going to go ahead and say it.
When these big, enormous, blanketed statements of it's unfair, I just want to boil it down to who it's unfair to.
The business model is unfair to the laborers in the business that are
but
not
only the
paid.
Football laborers.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what he's talking about. He's specifically referring.
No, he's talking about the NCAA as it legislates its thousands and thousands and thousands of schools and athletes.
Model. He's saying the business model would be illegal in any other industry. Why? Because you're making money off of unpaid labor.
And you're sharing it with Division 1, 2, 3, 1AA, tens
he's
of
not
thousands
getting to
of
point.
Athletes.
He's
no,
not
he's not
getting to that.
No, he's not. He's
and that's
simply
the point.
Saying,
he's saying at its core, the model's unfair. You can come up with
players.
Another model. He's just saying it's unfair, that it's illegal, that it wouldn't. He's not even saying it's unfair. He's saying illegal. It is illegal because of the unfairness
of it.
And
what he's talking about is not how much money is coming in. He's talking about the ability of the organization to tell players what they can and can't make. You can't just take these people and say you are not allowed to make money. You can't do that.
And that's another great way of looking at it, saying, okay, even if we can't fix paying players, can we stop limiting them from making money elsewhere? And
correct.
Yes, Brock, you're right. That would lead to boosters at a place saying, all right, come wash the car and I'll give you $200,000 a year. Okay.
Yep. But I think that's actually
totally
healthy.
I
actually think that's going to be one of the healthiest steps they could take. It's fearful, and it's releasing and relinquishing some control, but that is the natural next step.
Are you
going to
with
come
Alabama
name-
boosters or Ohio State boosters or anybody else spending $250,000 a year to pay a kid to wash their car?
Well, they're already paying them quite a bit anyway.
Well, that's kind of my point, right?
Yeah.
So why not just legalize it?
Yes. So the name, image, and likeness in that step that they're going to take, and I actually think it will level some of the playing fields.
Some of it.
I think there's going to be schools that have deep-pocketed boosters that really want to influence and say, okay, now finally is our turn at Boise State, at Nebraska, places that have a lot of resources, some sneaky resources, and maybe, you know, Alabama, instead of getting 20 of the 25 five-stars, gets 10 of them. And they're dispersed now to LSU, and they're dispersed, you know, throughout a little bit because everybody can pay. I think name, image, and likeness will be a healthy step. I think it will also be an incredibly healthy step for many to realize, geez, I don't have any market. I thought I was valuable.
No, but I think
I thought it was, you know, my name mattered. It wasn't about you. It's about the jersey, as Mike Falk has always said.
It's not just about the jersey. It's about the talent level that you and your peers together exhibit. That's why I think name, image, and likeness is a good start. But it doesn't go all the way, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, all right, good stuff. Second, Brock.
Palm's a little sweaty, by the way.
Okay, good.
Just
but you're okay. All right.
Yes.
Well, then let's go to full on.
Because I got to call
sweating.
You a red blooded free market capitalist, and that felt so good.
It made your month.
It did.
How's this going to work with NFL teams and vaccines? Mm. What? So we talked to. It's confusing, but. So the rule is, if you've been vaccinated in the NFL as a player, you
free pass.
Free pass, do whatever, right? Your life returns essentially to as it was pre-COVID.
Yes.
If you have not been vaccinated, then you have to what? You got to wear a mask in meetings.
Oh, you got to do everything you did.
Socially distance. You got to get
everything
tested.
Everything you did a year ago.
You're stuck
tested
in the team
every
hotels.
Day.
You can't eat in the cafeteria. Yeah, can't go out in the weight room.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm baffled that the players settled for this, and the owners, and I'm baffled by it in a bunch of different ways. I mean, if you're vaccinated, you're vaccinated. What do you care? If you're vaccinated and you have immunity, what do you care whether your teammate, who may have natural immunity, by the way, and I think there's a big percentage of these unvaccinated guys that are naturally, went through the process and got COVID, and have natural immunity.
Okay. I don't know if that's a process,
but they're in the circle.
Yes. All right.
So they have natural.
Take that part out of it, because I don't know that you and I really understand the science on that. But
I do. I've had it. I understand it completely.
Well, you understand it for
it.
You.
I understand it for every study out there. I understand it for the last 100 years of health
Brock,
and science.
I'm not necessarily arguing with you. Okay. I'm just saying I think that goes beyond the scope of what you and I are sort of qualified to discuss. Come back to the way it will manifest itself on the team.
Tricky. I think that, we talked earlier a little bit about the Mariners and their situation, and the Major League Baseball doesn't have this. They're not requiring unvaccinated players to wear masks and not be around the team and not be in the dugout, not be in the clubhouse and stick in the team hotel. And
you realize that Scott Servais has to wear a mask throughout an entire game while his players, many of whom have chosen not to, Scott, by the way, has been vaccinated for months now.
Right.
Many of his players have not been vaccinated. They don't have to wear a mask. Yes. He's sitting there in 100-degree heat with a darn mask on his face.
Yes.
If I'm Scott, I'd be so mad. Yeah. Like, I have to wear a mask because you won't get vaccinated?
But I'm vaccinated. Why do I have to wear a mask?
I don't know.
CDC
has
just
sense.
Said, take your mask off.
And that's why, Brock, I got to tell you, I agree with you on this.
Yes.
And I know it's going to surprise you. I agree with you.
Right.
If the people have been I've been vaccinated.
Yes.
If I have no issues being in a room with somebody who hasn't been. Now, if those same people were going to be going into my kid's school, I might have an issue because my kids haven't had an opportunity to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've but everyone who's in an NFL building is over the age of 12 has had that opportunity.
Yes.
I don't mind the fact that the other, let's call them 30%. I don't know what the numbers. Let's say it's 30% that are choosing not to be vaccinated.
Right.
If they want to take that risk, I'm fine with it. As long as they're fine with the repercussions of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, that's a choice that has been made. I'm totally 100% good with people making their own decisions about their own life.
Yes.
So I've chosen to go the path that I'm going to go. 70% of the NFL is likely going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once I've been vaccinated, I feel pretty safe. Like,
I mean, isn't that the whole point of a vaccine?
Yes.
Isn't that what it has always been?
You've got to get to a critical point, right? You've got to have enough people vaccinated for the thing to work and this, that. I mean, so there's some things about it.
70% is kind of that point. That's been that point.
So
throw in natural immunity or through.
Pretty good about it. Like,
I do not understand. I can't wrap my mouth. Not even like digging into the politics and the divisive nature of all. I'm just trying to wrap my head. Like, okay, Pete and his whole staff and all those other players are vaccinated. What do you care? If that player that may have natural immunity, by the way, what
argument?
And Brock, when you say natural immunity, you're saying that
because you've had the virus,
they've developed.
You've had the virus.
They're not just naturally born immune.
No, they've developed the antibodies through getting the virus,
which is me and my entire family, and I have a blood test to show that, and I have natural, long lasting, durable antibodies, which they can totally test for. So if you have that, why ostracize those players?
I guess my point is, I don't care whether you have antibodies or not.
And do I care that you have antibodies or not, or how you went about getting them?
I care that I do. I care that I've been vaccinated and that enough other people have been vaccinated that I feel safe.
Okay.
I don't really care what anybody else does. Yes. I'm not here to force anybody to do anything. If you don't want to get it, don't get it. I don't care. But like John Rahm, you may have to deal with consequences from that, right? And ultimately, those rules will probably soften here in the next few weeks and months. We're getting awfully close to that happening. Mm-hmm. John Rahm understood the risk he was taking. By the way, handled it like a pro. And it's a reason I was psyched for him last week. Like, I'm not mad at John Rahm for not getting vaccinated. I don't think he's stupid or anything else. He made an educated decision. Mm-hmm. He paid the price for it. He handled it like an adult and a professional. And he went back out the next week and won. Good for him. Yep. I feel great for John Rahm.
Yep.
The only argument I could make here is if I were an NFL team, I would say, well, you play for me. I pay your contract. You're exhibiting risky behavior akin to not wearing a seatbelt. And I'm just making an argument that an NFL team would make akin to not wearing a seatbelt or, you know, dangerous skiing in the off season or whatever the sort of, you know,
things that are already in contracts.
You're Malik McDowell-ing this. You're deciding to go jump on an ATV without a helmet. And if you get truly sick and end up missing games and or seasons from this, I don't want to pay you for it because it's your choice to do it. Now, if the players would stipulate that, would you be okay with stipulating that if the players were then not forced to mask up? And
yeah, are you going to then stipulate if you get the flu?
No,
and an pneumonia and something that we have had for decades and players that have been hospitalized.
I think they're going to say this is different.
Right.
I think they're going to say that there is a specific vaccine for this that somebody is choosing not to take. And if that's fine, but if me, the team, in this case, the paying entity, the management, is forced to pay out money because of a choice that someone else has made, I'm not willing to pay the money for that. Sorry.
And I think a number of those players that aren't would say, fine. Like 99.99999% of us.
Don't you think that should be the solution to this then?
Yes. Yes.
Like, okay, you and I just came up with a solution by being somewhat reasonable. You and I have 180 degree different views on COVID, on the vaccine, on management, on life and politics, religion, you name it. You and I disagree on it.
Yes.
And somehow in 5 freaking minutes, you and I were able to come up with a conclusion that satisfied both of us.
Correct.
Well, get it together, NFL. This shouldn't be that hard. Brock and I did it. You can too.
There we go.
All right.
Next.
Okay.
Do we have
cross that one
else?
Yeah, well, right off the
done.
List.
What do you got?
The NCAA question was a big, nice primer to that one.
Yes, we haven't finished that. Brock and I aren't quite done with that one. That one's taken us 12 years. It's obviously more complicated than COVID.
Yes.
Rahm does win the U.S. Open, and that's a story. But I was just thinking about how every other star faded, right? You're watching on Sunday.
Come on,
Rory
Bryson.
Fade. Bryson
on,
faded.
Bryson.
I know. That was such a bummer. He really, really faded.
Really faded.
I know. It was really sad.
Morikawa faded. Oosthuizen faded.
Yeah. I mean, he really just missed the one putt. But okay.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Shot in 17.
That too. Those two things. But he could have survived that by hitting the putt.
Yes.
And it was a makeable putt. Did you see the station in Iowa that went to weather as the putt was about to it was like a foot from the hole.
He hits the putt. It's rolling there to extend the tournament or essentially end the tournament. And they're like, breaking weather news. So good.
Pretty funny. So when you see all of those guys fade like that, do you, and by the way, you see big names missing cuts. Right, like Justin Rose didn't even make the cut. Right, that's one of the better golfers. What is he? Top five in the world? Miss a cut. When you see all that stuff, and then you see all the no name guys in contention.
Yep.
Are you A, more impressed with what Tiger did and the way he dominated the game and the way he brought in so many competitors that now they like beat each other all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, you wonder if the gap between the best and the sort of middling has sort of like deteriorated quite a bit.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost like NCAA basketball where you're like, hey, there's so many good golfers out there that on any week, you might get John Rahm winning and you might get, you know, some of these great big names in it. But you're also going to get Mackenzie Hughes.
Russell Henley
and Russell Knox and like guys that
Richard Bland.
Guys that you don't know anything about necessarily who are right there going stroke for stroke with the guys you think are the best in the world.
Yeah.
Jason Kokrak.
The distance that Tiger put between him and everybody else in the field in every way, in charisma, in edge, in game, in shot making, in finishing, in fortitude, and just a killer, right? Just a Tiger, just a killer instinct. That distance that he created, it's hard to imagine that any player in our lifetime is going to do the same.
Would you say no one else has that now? I mean, Koepka, by the way, is another guy who kind of faded.
Well, there's Dustin Johnson, there's Koepka, there's guys that can win multiple majors,
but they
the
don't do
distance
that.
That they create to everybody else in the field. What does Graz like to tweet at every Belmont or whatever it is, Derby, what is it, Kyle?
Right, of how Secretariat would have won. It's true.
Yes.
The second place horse wasn't even in the frame.
But we've seen those guys go head-to-head lose, right?
I mean, what Tiger did to the rest of the field in his decade era.
He went head to head.
For a decade. Jason Day did it for a year.
Right.
Francesco Molinari did it for 8 months.
Kepka did it for 2 years.
But not Dustin even. Johnson. I mean, I'm telling you, when you look at those guys, they've gone head to head like that and lost, right? I mean, DJ went head to head essentially last year at the PGA Championship and lost to Morikawa. Right? Mm-hmm. We've seen Kepka go head to head, was it with Gary Woodland a couple of years
ago?
Phil
Mickelson a couple of weeks ago.
And with Phil. I mean, yes. So great point. So you're right about that. That sort of, once they put themselves in position, forget it. You just don't have a chance. There's no one in golf who's got that.
Yeah, I just don't know what you can do in your game to distance yourself. Bryson DeChambeau, when you're there, as I was on a course, when he hits a ball, it sounds different. It's loud. But now they got some young South African that hits a 200-mile-an-hour shot as well.
Yep.
Like, you know, what Tiger was doing to the field physically, the athleticism and power that he brought, combined with just a killer, I'm going to go for your jugular and I'm going to tear your soul out of you.
And yet, when you talk to folks, like, Tiger was not that aggressive. He was like the master of kind of laying up a little bit and going for the middle of the green. He had every shot
in his bag.
Right. It's pretty
amazing. He had finesse and he had power. He had everything, right? Plus poise and control.
Dr. Galea. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's hard to imagine that in our lifetime, it's hard to imagine that there will be any other golfer due to that sport. Kind of this just reinforces your point that when you watch these leaderboards and you watch somebody, sure, Spieth's going to win another major or two or maybe three or four. Is he going to distance himself from the field like Tiger was able
to
do?
Too many good golfers.
Too many good guys.
Yeah,
too many tremendous athletes. Too much great technology for everybody, right? Studying every aspect of their swing, their measurements, their ball speed, their swing speed, their arc. Heck, you got that. Rep Soto at the driving range yourself.
Darn right. Yeah, gotta really go inside out. Swing path inside to out.
How's your game? What did you shoot the last time out?
I shot an 85 at the home course.
Oh.
Also par.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I've been playing. I can't get off the tee, though. By the way, I hit one drive the entire time.
How are you shooting 85 without getting off the tee?
Hitting 4-iron. Huh? Hitting 4-iron off the tee? Yeah.
Stinger. Your 4-iron stinger.
Not a stinger.
Stinger.
Hitting 4-iron off the tee, yeah. I can't hit my drivers. So I don't have a choice.
What about buck 85? What are we hitting that 4-iron? 200 with a roll?
210-ish, 225. Okay. So 210 to 220, generally.
Carry?
No, with a rollout.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's nice and dry here, Brock. It's beautiful. Let's not get carried away. Okay. So anyway, that's kind of where golf is at. It's fun to watch. I'm really enjoying the fact that these majors and all these tournaments the majors, by the way, are not any different really from the other tournaments now. I think that's the one interesting side note to all of the like success that a lot of these, or the lack of gap between the elite players and everybody else, is that the majors aren't that much different from the regular weekly tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
They all feature basically
the leaderboard on the back nine Sunday. That felt
it was pretty good. It was pretty good. Yes, you're right. I'm not saying there's zero, but like you could see that in a random tournament where all of a sudden like a bunch of those same guys are right there in it together.
It's not the majors. We just get the Euros. It's like, oh, Bezuidenhout's here this week.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
good.
Exciting. Yeah.
This is a big tournament.
And that course, frankly, looked like a Farmer's Open.
Didn't look great.
Yeah, for all the time we've defended Chambers Bay, you know, taking shots at U.S. Open sites. Well, those stones in a glass house. But Torrey Pines, I don't know.
So Carl Nassib comes out this week, right? He is likely to, I mean, he still hasn't played a game, so he has not been an active player yet, but there's no reason he wouldn't, right? He's still a good, productive player, right?
Yeah, I think so,
he just restructured his contract this offseason, so, I mean, because he was a cut candidate.
Oh, okay.
But so he restructured, he's going
to
be there.
He's going to play. So, I mean, like, he's a good player, he's going to play. This isn't like Michael Sam, where he had to, like, find his way to the league. He's going to play this year, and then will become the first active out gay player in the NFL. So it's been an interesting couple of days, right? I mean, he's been, as far as I've seen anyway, universally supported publicly by his team, his teammates, peers, the league. His jersey was the top selling jersey in the NFL for 2 days. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, I think it will be pretty seamless.
Seems that way.
I think it will be pretty seamless in that locker room. I'm curious how many guys that was even a surprise. right? And I don't know if that conversation will come up or those thoughts will come up. I certainly played over the course of my career, maybe with the guys that weren't open, but you know, I think there were certainly gay players and teammates that I had and played with. You saw Warren Moon tweet about that. I know that, talked to him about that through the different years of teammates that he had. I think most guys, if you talk to most that have been in college or NFL locker rooms over the last 20 or 30 years, you know, I think most would say, yeah, let's go play. You know, that's kind of where we've gotten to and those locker rooms have gotten to. And now let's go play and let's go win games.
Yeah, I've been pretty encouraged by just how small of a story this has been. Honestly, like it has not. I mean, Michael Sam was a gigantic nonstop talking piece for a while. This hasn't been that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to say that it hasn't been news. It's been news and it should be. It is a milestone. So it deserves some recognition and some news coverage. And that's great. It has not been, at least to my knowledge, a debate point. It has not been like a circus or anything like that. And maybe there'll be some of that at Raiders training camp. I doubt it, though. Yeah. I honestly think the pump has been primed for this over the last 5 to 10 years, so much so that it's like, yeah, all right, cool. Good for him. Really happy for him. Glad he feels comfortable. People are going to be in support of him. And so there's a group that will buy the jerseys that maybe have never bought a jersey before or just are interested in supporting him. And the fact that he was donating money to the Trevor Project and all these things, I mean, I think he handled it in a really mature, I don't know, very, very pleasant and like unobtrusive way. He managed to do something that for a long time people thought would be controversial and made it the exact opposite of that.
Most common reactions I saw was, this is the guy who gave financial advice on Hard Knocks. And it was like, oh, yeah, remember this video? He was talking compound interest.
Isn't his brother the quarterback, Ryan Nassib?
Yes.
Oh, I
didn't realize Syracuse? That. Did one of them go to Syracuse?
Yeah, they both did.
There you go.
No, I think Carl was Penn State.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other Nassib was Syracuse.
Ryan Nassib was a Syracuse quarterback.
Football.
Yes. He's Syracuse quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well
I remember
done,
him.
Salk. Well done.
Yeah, I remember when Carl Nassib came out of college. The first time
Penn State, DN, pass rusher, we looked at him long.
But
athletic.
I remember saying, no way. Yeah, you're not going to take the brother of a quarterback to be your DN. And so that's the only reason I remember
here
that.
Here comes
that's
your no ways. Boston College, pass rusher, no way. Here we
work.
Go.
It's not going to work. All right, last. Maybe we still don't have time for this. Do you have to go soon or can we do this?
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, because I want to do some Blue 88 with you, too.
Oh. I can do it quickly.
Okay, quickly.
We'll go up tempo. No huddle.
All right. The NFL or NHL expansion draft, which is coming in July.
Why don't you save this?
Really? Again?
I think so. Yes.
It's so cool, though.
I know,
I
but
can
it's
do it
coming.
Really quickly.
I know, but we got a couple weeks still towards it. All right. Why don't you prime the pump a
all
little
bit? All right. MLB All-Star break 10 days before the NHL draft.
Okay. All right. We're
going to
crush
it then.
Because I'll got some cool stuff in the NHL draft, but I'll wait on that. All right.
Some dry powder.
All right. Fine. Hold on.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88. We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, let's finish up here with a little Blue 88, and we will start here with question number 1. Frank Clark, arrested. Oof. Uzi in Lambo SUV. Not a proud moment necessarily for Frank.
Yeah.
How does this put into context the Seahawks' decision to trade Frank Clark a couple years ago?
I think it played a role. This is now the second gun charge for Frank, by the way. He had another incident in the last 12 months as well. And I think this is one of those situations. You'll hear a lot of guys say this, and money can make you do weird things. And we watched it. We watched it and the influence it had in that Seahawks locker room with a bunch of different players over a decade or so. And Earl Thomas is then, you know, wearing a robe and a crown and everything else.
It is his brother.
Yeah. Then just different aspects of it. Did this play a role? Did the Seahawks look at it and go, how sustainable is this? If we give this guy tens of millions of guaranteed dollars, are we going to see him towards the very end of this contract? I think those were parts of that decision. Yes. Yes, I do. And they knew him better than anybody else knew him. And this is not just a total rip job on Frank Clark, by the way, who I think grew a ton within this program. But when you're giving that generational wealth, that kind of freedom that comes with it, that kind of money, I think you are going to be a little bit more careful. And I do think it was part of the aspect that played a role in them moving on from him and trading him ultimately for the first round pick.
I think I would tend to agree with that. Let's go to question number two. What is the next Seahawks headline you expect to read?
Jamal Adams signs extension with Seattle.
Let's go, right?
Yeah. There were a bunch of articles. I think you wrote an article about it. You're talking a ton about it. Obviously, others caught on to that conversation. Was a huge talking point as he held out for mandatory minicamp because of an excuse, personal reason, and absence and everything else. I think that one's got to get done. I don't know if it will be this week or next week. It may end up being right around training camp because I do think those guys pack their bags. I think they head out of town. I think they were pretty clear with Jamal that here's our window of opportunity, but John and the capologist and the rest of the team, we're going away. That's what happens. This is truly their vacation time before the absolute grind of the season. And from past experiences, we've seen it. I don't think there's a ton of business that's going to get done in these next few weeks. I don't think it will be until training camp. But I don't think you can do something with Dwayne Brown, make a Stephon Gilmore, some of these other possibilities out there until you get that deal done. I think that's the next headline.
It has to be, right? I mean, and hopefully it is, because the alternative is that the next headline is a Seahawk arrested for something here in this sort of dead period. So I hope you're right and that is the next headline we read about the Seahawks. Question number three. We had a little college conversation earlier. What the heck's going on down at ASU? And I normally don't care, right? I mean, like, it's kind of a mess, but I only care because Herm's down there. Is Herm going to be okay?
I don't think so.
No.
Really?
Not good.
Oh, what's happening? So explain a little bit to me, because...
Well, there's something called a dead period. Yeah, there was a 15-month dead period for everybody, and it was not gray. It was not a staple. It was not a slice of pizza. It was not anything like that. It was as black and white as can be. It is a dead period. There is nobody allowed on campus. There is nobody that you can go recruit. You can't go into other people's gyms. It was a dead period in the pandemic, end of story. And I think by all accounts, by the most trusted reporters and sources in college football, I chatted with a few of them as well. They were not dead in Tempe, and they were bringing student athletes onto campus. They were bringing them in offices. Heck, they were even working them out. Antonio Pierce, middle linebacker, former middle linebacker, recruiting coordinator, very headstrong guy, I think was a major force in this. But ultimately, it falls on Herm's desk, and he's got to be the one responsible for it. By all accounts, he was not, and I don't know if he survives this.
Jeez.
Yes, not good.
Why do that?
Because you think you can get away with it.
But there's plenty of other things.
Yeah, we can get away with it. And we got to win, man. We're in year four. We got to win. We got to beat USC. And we got to get these players. And we got to get our recruiting class in the top 15, not the top 30. And we got to go about it. And how are we going to go about it? If we just do it the same way we've always done it, we're going to be sitting where we're sitting. So how do we take that next step? Oh, and you know, it's a dead period. I know, but they'll look the other way. The NCAA has no teeth anyway. They got no power. You know who does? David Shaw, who called him out, is a cheater 4 hours after that report came out. That's a bad deal.
Well, there you go. That's Blue 88 with three good football questions. The Frank Clark thing, man, like, I agree with you. I'm sure that factored into the decision. It's still a tough one. I mean, the guy helped Kansas City go to two straight Super Bowls and win one.
Yep.
Like, throwback with the Uzi, by the way. Like, it's not usually you go AR-15.
You don't,
like,
hear Uzi.
What, did he have a Tommy gun? Like, right. Is he a 1920s mobster?
It's like, more of a Rambo thing. Like, I expect Rambo to have an Uzi.
Arrested last week and then also had that incident in March. Correct. With the exact same thing. They found visibly a gun sticking out of a bag inside the car.
Does he not have a zipper on these bags? What's going on?
I think that's maybe the biggest
too
problem.
Big.
That's why the Seahawks moved on. Guy can't figure out zippers. Well, let's move on from this guy. All right, man. Good stuff. Mariners continue to do their thing, so we'll see where we're at when we meet again. Until next time, Brock. But hey,
he's in the barn.
See everybody.
This is